He was never taught to keep his opinions to himself. That's why we love him. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, welcome back to the Jeff Blair Show. Got to get the segment over in a hurry because I want to go have some of the St. Louis ribs they just dropped off here. So everybody else is eating. They are, of course, a 100% Canadian franchise. They have 42 locations, one in New Brunswick. I don't even know. They haven't even figured out the election in New Brunswick yet, have they? Are they still held? Oh, the voting machine's broke. I don't know why. See, they should do what they do in Hamilton. It's just you're allowed to vote as often as you want in Hamilton. Vote early, vote often is what we say in Hamilton. Anyhow, it is the Rib Sanity promotion, by the way, from September 22nd to October 12th. All you can eat ribs for $23.99, which is a pretty good deal. And as soon as I get off the air with Wyshynski and take some calls, I'm going to go and have some ribs. How you doing, Wyshynski?
Ribs.
Ribs are good.
Excellent choice, sir. A very excellent choice.
Although, you know, ribs, as a young child, ribs disappointed me because I always assumed that they were... See, I used to watch the Flintstones, and I always assumed ribs were like the ribs you saw in the Flintstones, you know, that pulled the car over. And I was a young child, and then finally when I got a little older, and I, you know, ribs, I'm going, come on. Got to be bigger than that. Anyhow. World Cup of Hockey.
And also, the real struggle, the real human struggle with ribs is that sometimes they're overcooked, and then it's like literally trying to eat a scab. It's disgusting.
Wow. you just spoil my appetite. World Cup of Hockey 2016. Y'all excited?
I'm excited. I think it's going to be a ton of fun, and I'm excited that the NHL will commit its players to an exhibition tournament and actually make some money off of it. What a novel concept, right? I know that there's inherent danger with injury whenever you're doing one of these things, but it really does bug me that the NHL and the NHLPA see absolutely no benefit from going to the Olympics other than the chance to participate on the world stage. Mm-hmm. And the idea that they can develop their own thing and supersede the IOC and make money off it, sell official gear in their stores, which is something that the IOC won't allow them to do for the Olympics, is a great thing for the National Hockey League. And I hope the tournament can become something that they do every few years and becomes a huge success.
See, I've always felt that every time you screw the IOC or FIFA, another angel gets its wings. So I'm a big fan of this. I'm a big fan of this move. And all kidding aside, I agree with you. Look, you know, the Olympics are a great thing and everybody gets worked up about it, but let's see it for what it is. Basically, the NHL shuts down for 2 weeks so its players can risk injury to get a medal. Where's the gain there?
And from a business perspective, it provides no benefit. There's no bump. You can count on one hand the number of players that have, whose reputations have improved or soared because of the efforts that they put forth in the Olympics. In theory, the better way to do it is to just cap the age of the players you can send there. And then if you're going 25 and under, mm-hmm. Well, now you're really making star players that might have not been star players before on that stage. But, you know, there's no financial benefit. There's no bump in attendance, no bump in interest. Or the casual fans are Olympic fans here in the States, and they're not going to come and all of a sudden watch the NHL because of the Olympics. And on top of that, I mean, you know, in talking to John Collins and some of the guys from the NHL, they really aren't going to go if there isn't a more beneficial deal for them for 2018. And by that we mean, you know, more revenue streams that they can create based off the Olympics, including such simple things as selling a Russian Ovechkin T-shirt at the NHL store, which they're not allowed to do right now.
Yeah, and with all due respect to everybody, the NHL is not going to get a marketing boost from playing hockey in South Korea. It's just not.
No.
It's not, especially if the games are going to be at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning. I had a conversation with Donald Fehr about this a couple of years ago, and I threw out the idea of why doesn't hockey do at the Olympics what soccer does, which is essentially turn it into a World Under-23 tournament, allow each country to grandfather, I think it's two or three players. So that way, if, you know, if you've got an Alexander Ovechkin who absolutely positively wants to play in the Olympics, he can do it. But you put a cap on it. You're only allowed to do it once. Then, and I mentioned that to Donald Fehr, and Donald said, well, the problem with that is if you look at the number of star players in the NHL who are around 23 years old, and you turn it into an under 23 tournament, so you're still going to have teams losing pretty significant players for 2 weeks during the season. And, you know, when you put it that way, you look at it that way, I mean, a Canadian under 23 team, that would be like an NHL all-star team.
For sure. But I do, I mean, listen, I do agree inherently with the idea that if you're going to commit to the Olympics, you commit to the Olympics. I don't like the idea of doing it like how MLS does when they have this other league going on while the World Cup's going on and all the attention is elsewhere. I mean, say what you will about the Olympic hockey tournament, it's still a huge draw all around the world and will be whether or not the NHL is in or is not in. And the idea that you're going to try to compete with that for a 2 or 3 week period still doesn't fly with me. I don't know. It's a complicated call. I think the NHL will wind up participating in the next Olympics only because when you have a $2 billion deal with a broadcast partner in the U.S. and they also happen to have the Olympic Games, I tend to believe that you're going to benefit, you know, do what they want you to do and send your players. But we'll see. I mean, I think the World Cup is a real game changer, and I'm excited to see how they get that going.
Greg Wyshynski joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. So you're at Gary Bettman's session at the Canadian Club yesterday. What did you come away with any great takeaway? I thought his explanation about the possibility of two teams in one market was actually resonated with me.
Yeah, I thought it was a really clever take, and it's something I've considered before, which is the hunger for a second team in Toronto born out of the Leafs' futility and inability to win a Stanley Cup? And I think that's part of it. But the one thing that Bettman didn't touch on, which is in talking to a lot of fans here in Toronto about the possibility of a second team, is the idea that affordability is the real driving point for a lot of fans and availability insofar as getting a second team here. If another team came into the market and offered tickets at a significantly lower rate than the Leafs do, and those tickets are also available, which Leafs tickets most of the times are not, that I think fuels the desire to have a team here as much as having an alternative to the Leafs insofar as on-ice performance. And that's something that Bettman didn't really touch on yesterday.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, though, Greg, if a new team comes in here, first of all, I'm sure that the NHL, as part of the negotiating process, that the Leafs and the NHL would somehow see to it that ticket prices are relatively close to what the Leafs are. People have this idea that a new team in here is going to result in decreased ticket prices. It'll result in more availability. There's no way in hell the ticket prices are going to be any less than the Leafs. I'd look at it counterintuitively. Say, if the demand is that great and I've got the new team in the city, guess what? I'm going to put my ticket prices up over the Leafs because you can't get Leafs tickets.
It's an interesting thought. I don't necessarily think it's something that will come to fruition in the first few years of their existence. But, you know, the idea of there being an alternative for fans that don't want to drive to Buffalo to see a game because they can't get Leafs tickets, I think is an appealing one. And I've long argued that if they do a second team in Toronto, they should put it in the Western Conference, go old school, make Toronto in the West. And that way you have all these Western Conference teams coming through in one arena, and then all the Eastern Conference teams coming through in the other arena, if they were to have two different arenas, mind you. And then obviously setting you up for what would be a cataclysmic event.
I mean,
this is the sort of thing that killed the dinosaurs, an all-Toronto Cup final.
It would be like the Ice Age. I'm just thinking of that. I don't even want to begin to imagine how the hell we'd handle an all-Toronto Stanley Cup.
Oh, and not only that, but imagine being a fan of the Toros or whatever the hell we're going to call them, and knowing that you have, and I experienced this as a New York Mets fan, okay? Knowing that you have one shot,
yes,
seven games for eternal bragging rights. I mean, that's what's on the line there. If you are the second team, if you are the Nets to the Knicks in this scenario, and you beat the Leafs in the Cup final?
Oh, my God.
Forget it. Then you have bragging rights in perpetuity.
And you know what would happen, too, of course, right? It would be the only time the Leafs have made the final since 67. The Leafs would finally make the final, and they'd lose to the Toronto Toros. Like, just, see, now you got me excited.
It makes too much sense to do it that way. And we you know, as much as Bettman poo-pooed it yesterday, I still think that they're going to wind up putting, you know, two teams in the West to balance this thing out at 16 and 16. But, again, the real question is you've got three cities. Four if you count Las Vegas, and what do you do with them? Because everybody you talk to says Quebec's done,
yeah,
and that's going to happen. And then the Toronto thing's a little bit stickier. Seattle, they have to figure out the dynamics of the arena, and Vegas is the sexy. We want to be the first league there. Listen, we've both seen, Jeff, the NHL have real problems. This is a good problem to have.
Sure it is.
There's four good markets, and your league is making money hand over fist. You can see why they're being patient with it, but it's a good problem to have.
Mr. Wyshynski, I appreciate you joining us this morning. It's always good to talk to you.
Anytime. Thanks.
That is Greg Wyshynski of the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast, which I understand they're now taking it in the road. Apparently, they're taking it in the road. They did a live show. See, that's really cool. That's what, like, the Brit soccer shows do. They go up to Manchester for a couple of days, sit in a pub and do their soccer shows, like the Guardian Football Weekly. People just get, you know, snot-puking drunk and start insulting the host. It's great. I'd love to be in that situation. Yeah, we could just do a show where everybody calls me Mike. You're very funny, Travis. Or Tom, as you're now known. 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Let's talk about this World Cup of Hockey. Just to reset it, SI.com, quoting a report out of the Czech Republic, that the NHL and the NHL Players Association are moving forward at a rapid clip towards establishing or reestablishing the World Cup of Hockey. Our Chris Johnson of Sportsnet on Twitter said that he's been told by a high-level source that September 15th to October 1st, 2016, are working dates for a reborn World Cup of Hockey. And I'm all about this. Because I got to tell you the truth. It's not always sexy to say that you think the NHL should make more money. But I've never been able to figure out why the NHL was so excited to get hooked up with the International Olympic Committee. You can't sell your merchandise. You make no money from it. Obviously, there's a tie-in with your broadcast partner. Your players risk injury. And you shutter your arenas for 2 weeks in the middle of the season. The Olympic hockey competition is great. Don't get me wrong. We all get excited about it. But my sense is if you held this as a World Under 23 tournament, as they do with soccer, if you held this as a World Under 23 tournament, people would still get excited. I mean, you're still seeing great players. You're still seeing Canada versus Russia. Right? You're still seeing Canada versus the U.S. You're still seeing Sweden versus Finland. But it's mostly young players with, as the soccer competition is, some older players grandfathered in. I've covered the soccer competition at two Olympics. And I saw Lionel Messi in China playing for Argentina. The competition is great. The players take it really seriously. And the older players who are grandfathered into the side take it really seriously. It's a fun competition. That's where hockey should be going in the Olympics. And I would love to see a World Cup of Hockey, a bona fide World Cup of Hockey. The NHL thinks it could generate about $100 million per event. Absolutely, they could. So I want to get your take on this at 416-870-0590, star 591, 888-666-0590. Would you be in favor of a World Cup of Hockey if it meant that the NHL is no longer in the Olympics? Or if it meant that you were seeing some sort of change in the NHL's involvement in the Olympics? Because honest to God, the NHL assumes all the risk here, and they don't get much from it. I can tell you, you know when I learned what the IOC was all about? When I was covering women's soccer in London, or at the London Olympics, and Canada was playing the United States in women's soccer at Old Trafford, home of Manchester United, one of the most storied franchises in sports. Manchester United was not allowed to have their gift shop open at Old Trafford. They were not allowed to sell their merchandise at Old Trafford. It was only IOC merchandise. They went so far as to force some of the little kiosks, sort of the mom and pop operations that sell souvenirs around Old Trafford. They weren't allowed to set up on the grounds. They had to set up across the street. And there was like, there was maybe two or three of them. You think about this. And I'm a Man U fan. It's the first time I've set foot in Old Trafford. I can't buy a Man U jersey in Old Trafford because the freaking IOC has shut down the gift shop. I can buy 1,000 IOC shirts. I can buy IOC baby bottles. I can buy IOC chairs. I can buy everything. Can't buy a Manchester United item. So, I really do believe this. Anything that screws the IOC is good, as far as I'm concerned. There is no more money-hungry, well, other than FIFA. I mean, they're both the same. I mean, they make the NHL look like a bunch of raving socialists, moralists. So I like the idea of World Cup of Hockey. I like the idea of having a round training camp. Logistically, I would assume there's a way that you could prevent some of the smaller countries from competing. And I'm not saying that I'm against smaller countries. Look, Latvia is a great story every year, and God knows their fans know how to party, and so do their writers, frankly. That's another story for another day. So I have no problem with allowing, with having a competition that allows smaller countries in. But I think if you scale it down, limit it to six teams, maybe have some sort of play-in for a couple of the other countries, it's a great way to grow the game. It makes perfect sense. And why shouldn't the NHL get money for this? Because they're assuming all the risk. Stephen Whitby, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Nice rant.
Thank you.
I love it, brother. I think we really have to get away from the from professionals at the Olympics.
You're here.
The whole idea was amateur athletics. And I think just like we're financially stealing from our children with all these bailouts and everything that's going on right now, we're stealing from our children in the Olympics. Like when I grew up, I watched the juniors go to the Olympics and we cheered them on, and it was grassroots. We'd be, you know, 40 deep in someone's basement, right? Because we knew these kids growing up in Whitby. We have a lot of hockey players here,
and it was, right? A combination of guys from junior and college guys. I remember those teams. A couple of NHL guys were in the team. I'm with you. I like the idea of hockey's always going to be part of the Olympics, and it should be part of the Olympics. But
and
Steve,
I agree with it for basketball as well too.
Absolutely.
Soccer. Get rid of the pros. We basically ruined it, right? We know what's going to happen anyways, and it's just like, you know, let's watch the car accident.
Yeah,
it's going to be Mangle at the end, and whatever, right? The Americans are going to take it. Maybe us or Russia are going to take it in hockey, right? Once you level the playing field and you give these kids a chance to scratch and claw, they get better. When you put somebody up against a measuring stick, they get better.
Well, I think the biggest thing to keep in mind, though, is you would probably still have, you would definitely still have pros in it. There would just be an age restriction. I can't imagine you would want to damage the World Junior Tournament by turning the Olympics into another World Junior competition. There's certainly ways of getting it done. You can limit the number of pros in the team. You can limit the number of NHL games by players in the team. And yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I'm old enough I can remember Canada sending its amateurs over to get the you-know-what kicked out of them by the Russians. I can remember that. I remember going to the Winnipeg Arena to see the Canadian national team play. And then they were a bunch of college guys and a couple of ex-NHL guys, and they'd pick up some guys who were playing hockey in Europe, some Canadian guys, and they would get thumped by the Russians all the time. but we saw it for what it was. And I think hockey fans are mature enough now that they would see it, that type of a tournament for what it was. I mean, soccer fans for the longest time turned their noses up at the concept of Olympic soccer. Then they went and saw some of the matches. And you realize that you're seeing future stars. You're seeing just enough older guys who have hung around to play. And it's pretty cool. And when you sit in an Olympic stadium and there's 72,000 people watching Argentina and Nigeria play for the gold medal, it's a big event. And that was in Beijing. It was a huge event. Lionel Messi played and Victor Anachibi played for Nigeria. Joseph Yobo was playing for Nigeria. He was their veteran, sort of the player who was grandfathered in. Javier Mascherano was the Argentine veteran who'd been grandfathered. It was terrific soccer. It was spectacular. And people ate it up. Vito and Aurora, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
How's it going?
Good, man.
Listen, I totally agree. I think that's a great idea with the World Cup of Hockey, maybe having it every 3 years, every other year maybe. My only concern maybe is just the amount of teams. I don't know if six is enough or maybe like 10 to 12. You are going to get the bottom kind of teams, those countries that maybe shouldn't be there. But like you said, experience maybe makes them a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But I'd like to see maybe in the future something a little further is having like a Champions League of hockey, having the top four NHL teams.
I would love to see
group
that.
With, you know, KHL and all the other leagues around the world. What do you think about that?
I would love to see that. Look, I'm a big believer in international competition. I know Donald Fehr is as well. And I've got to think the NHL. Look, the NHL has done so many good things in terms of marketing its game with the Winter Classic, the Heritage Classics, whatever you want to call it. It's really done such a good job of setting that, putting that thing in motion that I've got to think this would be a huge success. And yeah, I'd love to see a Champions League of hockey. You know, anything that, like I said, if the NHL is going to assume the risk, I think it's only right that the NHL get a chance to gain as much as it can from it. And right now, all I see during the Olympics is a league that shuts itself down, that tries to find something for a lot of its players to do for 2 weeks so its players can go over, risk injury, and generate revenue for another organization. I mean, whatever you may think about the NHL, hell, whatever you may think about private business, it just doesn't seem right to me. So why shouldn't the NHL be in a position where it can make a ton of money off international competition? It's the only sport that doesn't do it right now. Basketball does. Soccer does. Boy, does soccer ever. Baseball does. And, you know, again, we can argue about the strength of the World Baseball Classic. But having covered a couple of them, the TV ratings are huge in Asia. It has expanded the sport. It's brought the sport to a different level internationally. And it's like anything else, it's kind of achieved its niche. And the other thing that the World Baseball Classic has done is because it is a formal partnership between owners and players. I mean, it is a formal partnership. The company that runs the World Baseball Classic is made up of representatives of the Major League Baseball Players Association and Major League Baseball. It has actually helped some of the labor negotiations in baseball because there is that shared sense of responsibility. There's that shared sense of revenue. Never underestimate how important it is when you've got two sides that are, by definition, at each other's throats all the time. Or that by definition stand for different things, protecting players' rights versus protecting owners' rights. never underestimate the importance of having things that you can work together on that are successful. And never underestimate the back channels that that creates, the ability to get stuff done that that creates. There's a reason that Major League Baseball has had a relatively prolonged period of labor peace. One of those reasons is the World Baseball Classic. There's a real sense of shared worth. There's a real sense of shared revenue. There's a tangible benefit to having both sides work together. And you know what? If you can have a tangible benefit working on this, then if a situation arises in a different area of the game, whether it's drug testing or whatever, if we've had the common experience of being successful doing one thing, we're probably going to have a different approach to each other when we deal with another matter. So I think it's something whose time has come. And I truly do hope the NHL is full speed ahead with this. Speaking of business, how do you feel about advertising on uniforms? See, it's going to happen eventually. As is the case in soccer, it's going to happen eventually. And, you know, this is how it's going to happen. You're going to be told that it's going to help keep your ticket prices down, which is basically a lie. But you're going to be told that it's going to keep your ticket prices down, when in reality, what it will do is generate more revenue for Major League Baseball teams. San Francisco Giants CEO Larry Baer went on record on a radio show with our friend Ray Ratto a couple of days ago that once Bud Selig departs as commissioner, he can see advertising being put in Major League Baseball uniforms. He believes it would start in the sleeve, but he also admits that it could go further than that. So I don't know. Could you imagine the New York Yankees uniform with Chevrolet on the front? Do you think somebody might pay for that? Eric Fisher is a baseball business reporter at the Sports Business Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric Fisher, SBJ. And Eric Fisher will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues. Right up the Baseball Central at noon with Cliff Floyd in the house for half an hour on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prizes like no other, from a club like no other, The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we're just half an hour away from Baseball Central at noon with yours truly, Joe Siddle, and Cliff Floyd, who is in studio. And we're going to be talking about, remember we were telling you last week about the D30, the protective headgear for baseball players? We'll be talking about that and other matters with Cliff Floyd at noon on Baseball Central at noon. So Larry Baer is the CEO of the San Francisco Giants, and he was on a radio show in the Bay Area a couple of days ago talking about advertising on uniforms. And we've talked about this in the past. I think it's something that's eventually going to happen in North America. I think it's going to be widespread. I'm not saying that it's going to happen in the next year and that every team in North America is going to have advertising in their uniforms, but I think you'll see some teams do it. And, you know, you'll have teams, you know, take a look at soccer. Barcelona, for the longest time, wore a uniform with UNICEF's logo on it. I mean, essentially, they weren't sponsored by UNICEF. They were, they were marketing, or they were supporting UNICEF. So, I mean, there are various ways around it if you've got a team that doesn't feel that it wants advertising across its uniform. And Larry Baer's analysis was that we will initially, at least, see the advertising someplace on the sleeve of the jersey. In other words, we're not talking about having Chevrolet across the front of the New York Yankees uniform. But I honestly do think it's something that's going to happen eventually. And I think Larry Baer's, the line that got our attention in his interview was his suggestion that with Rob Manfred replacing Bud Selig, a lot of things like this were on the table. And that a lot of things that people have spoken about as revenue generating ideas would likely have to wait until Bud was out of the picture and Rob was fully, fully in charge of the commissioner's office. It's an interesting idea. And, I bounced it off a couple of marketing people based in the States yesterday, and both of them said the same thing. They said they thought that the idea that this was going to happen in the next 5 years and it was going to be widespread and the Maple Leafs would have right above the Leafs logo a corporate sponsorship, they didn't think that that was the way it was going. But they also said, and these were three people I spoke to, also said that baseball would be the first sport to take the real step into having corporate sponsorship in a uniform. Again, that was just their opinion. Eric Fisher is a baseball business reporter for the Sports Business Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric Fisher, SBJ, and Eric Fisher joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Eric, thanks so much for doing this. I know we've talked about this, I think, on this show in the past, and I'm not saying that advertising is something that's going to happen in the next year or so, but it does appear when you talk to people as if we are going to start to see a gradual experimentation with it on the part of sports leagues, aren't we?
Yeah, there's a variety of things going on. You sort of look at baseball specifically, and you mentioned sort of the oncoming arrival of the Manfred era. You sort of think back to what was going on last month with the election. All three of the final candidates, Rob, Tim Brosnan, Tom Werner, it was really 2 days of a whole conversation of where does this sport need to go? And it ended up becoming not just an election, but a very open-ended conversation about where do we want to take the sport? And so I think that's where some of that lies. So there's that kind of trend line that's factoring into this conversation. And then you really got the internationalization of sport in general, where all of these American and North American leagues are looking at Europe and vice versa. And you look at what's happening in Europe, and so much of jersey sponsorship is happening over there. That's where MLS obviously pulled that in. The NBA is now talking very well, really have been for 2 years now. So there's all sorts of different forces colliding on this, and you kind of, one of the outcomes is a comment like what Larry Bird just made.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we'll ever see a day? Let's stick to Major League Baseball. Will we ever see a day where there will be a Chevrolet logo on the front of a baseball jersey, as is the case with Manchester United or any soccer team? I'm just pulling.
Eventually, probably. I mean, we've already seen it for the international games when we've had regular season games in Japan. We've seen it in the World Baseball Classic. So you've already seen bits and pieces. I think you probably would start with spring training and see what kind of the reaction is there. And if that goes well, then, certainly within 5 years or so, maybe that starts to creep into a regular season kind of environment. But I think, again, we've seen it in these kind of international settings. I think spring training would be the next big step, or maybe the affiliated minor leagues.
Eric, you've covered the commissioner's office for a number of years. You're pretty familiar with Bud Selig and with Rob Manfred and some of the people around them. How much of a sea change do you think Rob Manfred as commissioner is going to be?
Not immediate. It's not like everything changes on day one or even year one. But I think assuming he's in there for some meaningful length of time, 5, 10 years, whatever it is, I think we'll look back and see with the benefit of history in retrospect that we'll see a lot of change. And again, getting back to the kind of vibe that we had with the election last month, it's just going to be a very different environment politically, that you had this big knockdown, drag out conversation for 2 days, and the owners really kind of liked it. That, yes, it took a long time and it was a long couple of days, but a lot of teams really kind of enjoyed having an open voice in a way that they had not during the Selig era, because he handled things politically on a much more private one-to-one kind of level, and votes really didn't happen until Bud had already kind of done the back work already. Mm-hmm. I think things are going to be a little messier and out in the open.
So it is going to be a very different kind of thing. Where Rob's sensibilities are personally, I think he's pretty close to Bud, and I think that was a big part of where and why he was elected. But again, he's coming into a very different political environment. So I think eventually over time, we're going to see a variety of big changes.
As far as other leagues go and the possibility of advertising in other uniforms, I was in my preamble, I was making the point. I called three marketing people in the States I've known for a while, sports marketers, and I just asked them the point, which league do you think would be the first to do this? And I just assumed, frankly, they'd say basketball, because basketball's already kind of fiddled around a little bit with the idea of putting putting a logo on the back of the jersey and all this stuff. And basketball seems to be a little more creative that way. But I was surprised. They all said baseball. And they said basketball, yeah, we can see it doing eventually. But they said baseball just because you got 162 games. You know, 162 games to advertise in a New York Yankees uniform. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I guess I would disagree, only because basketball has already put a lot of study into this in terms of how it's going to happen, how the money's going to be split, because there was all sorts of question terms, a big market, small market, how this gets shared, how this may be similar to how traditional team level sponsorship is done, how it's different. There's a lot of sort of big questions along with this. It's one thing to say you're going to do it. It's another thing to actually put it into action and have this be some kind of meaningful and fair and equitable thing for all parties involved. So the NBA's been pretty far down the road on this already. So I would still say that they would be the ones out front on this. They just had a big head start on this.
How do you think fans would react to it in North America?
I think okay. Again, as long as it's sort of modest and tasteful. I think 5 years ago we'd be having a very different conversation around that, but the MLS has got a lot of, I think, credit for this. Again, they're sort of pulling in culturally where everything is happening with the rest of global soccer. And, the last 2-3 years have been a real big historic period of growth for MLS. And they've got a couple more franchises coming in next year with Orlando and New York City. And they're on a real upswing now. And this has been part and parcel of who they are for their entire existence. And now that they've got sort of a seat at the grown-up table, so to speak, it's sort of helped to change the environment.
One of the things that, Larry Bear said during this interview was he said this could be a way of keeping ticket prices down as costs go up, which, I kind of immediately rolled my eyes when I heard that. But is there an element of that at work here? Could there be an element of cost containment for fans? And might that be, at least initially, Eric, might that be a way to sell it to the fans, the first couple of years, to sort of make it known publicly that you're not raising ticket prices?
I think that's pretty comical. Tickets are based on supply and demand, and supply and demand based in large part on on-field performance. I think it's just a separate consideration, and I think that was a way to try to make the medicine go down. But in reality, I just find it pretty ridiculous. And there's all sorts of different ways to grow money, whether it be national TV or international or what MLB Advanced Media is doing. There's all sorts of different revenue lines in baseball that have been growing and will continue to grow, and none of those things have come out in any sort of direct relation to ticket prices. Baseball just doubled all their national TV contracts. It's not like anybody got a break on ticket prices because
that's
of that.
True. So that's true.
It's a fairly laughable comment. I mean, if you want to have a conversation, as we are, about uniforms, uniform heads in and of themselves, that's fine, but to connect it to ticket prices, that's a joke.
Hey, Eric, very, very quickly, there's a report out that the NHL is sort of gone full speed ahead with the World Cup of Hockey for 2016. I've been telling people it shouldn't come as a great surprise, because Donald Fehr has been involved in the USOC. He's a bit of an internationalist. And it kind of makes sense that, well, he's in charge of the NHL Players Association, this concept would grow. But I'm interested, because I've been told that the World Baseball Classic, some people credit it in some ways with having helped smooth over labor relations a bit in baseball because the two sides have worked in something that can generate revenue and there's a little carryover, at least the idea.
Oh, they jointly own the event.
Right, but what has happened is that familiarity has helped in other areas. You know, when you have a meeting with somebody about some issue, at least there's that sense that I may hate this guy in this issue, but, you know, we kind of work together okay in this other thing. Has it helped labor relations in baseball?
I think there's no question. I think what Rob did to help create a good working relationship with the union, you know, a lot of that hard work was done before the first World Baseball Classic happened in 2006, and I think it's a big part of why he's now going to be commissioner. But to your point, I think it's just only built upon that base that was previously established, and now you've had three runs of that tournament on 6, 9, and 13. You've had pretty significant growth each time. It'll come back again in 17 and be bigger and better again. I'm a big fan of the event. I'll just lay that out right. And but to your question, yeah, I think it's definitely helped because you've got this thing where you're continuing to have meetings on a common goal, and it's not an oppositional thing, that the entire construct for why you're coming together is completely different in terms of how much can I get off the other side? It's how can we grow the pie together? And that's a different kind of construct. And yeah, I do think it's been very beneficial.
Eric, it was good of you to do this today. Thanks so much. Always good to talk to you, my friend. You be well.
Always a pleasure. You too.
That is Eric Fisher. He's a baseball business reporter for Sports Business Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at Eric Fisher SBJ. And, of course, you can go on to Sports Business Journal's site to read his stuff. That's it for the Jeff Blair Show. It is time for Baseball Central at Noon with yours truly and Joe Siddle, joined in studio by Cliff Floyd of the MLB Network. And we're going to discuss the playoff race and the ball cap liner that Cliff Floyd has created to make the game safer for those playing it. We talked about it last week, and we've got Cliff Floyd in studio to talk about it. Baseball Central at Noon is next, everybody.